content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Bellientos, Lexi Brinkley, and Vaughn Eaglin. How you doing, Vaughn?
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, ladies?
Good.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm a little quirky today. A little low
quirky
on
is
sleep.
Good.
A little quirky.
How do I look good?
Quirky is good.
Oh, I thought you said I look good. I was going to say
wrong
thank
with
you.
Me. Well, you do look good, Bern.
You do look good.
You do look good.
You're like, thanks.
My skin looks good in spite of having, I've had no sleep for weeks.
In spite of having.
In spite of having no sleep. Or in spite of not having sleep. I don't know. You're getting me confused already.
Okay.
Well, here's a tongue twister. Okay. So we were talking about this before we went live about, we're talking about deal with your stuff or lose your relationship with Vaughn Eaglin today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're just now joining us, and Dr. Jonathan Avery as well will be joining us talking about the opioid epidemic and youth substance abuse, something you know a lot about.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. So I have a lot of adolescents that come into my office with different types of drug use and sometimes even drug addiction. So I see everything from kids taking like acid tabs to, of course, marijuana, even kids doing meth. I've seen a lot of things come inside my office. And so it just depends. And it doesn't matter what socioeconomic class that you're in. I see it all, amongst poor people, middle class and then high income people, too. So,
absolutely. excuse me. I've got a drink with cayenne pepper. Maybe that's what's doing it.
Those are spicy.
Yeah,
they are. But I like it. It's just.
Isn't that like what everyone does to cleanse? They do like a cayenne pepper lemon juice.
Mm-hmm. I just needed more hydration, and I've been drinking so much water.
So what does the cayenne pepper do?
It increases your metabolism, I believe.
I need some of that. I'm a fat kid, so.
But it's got filtered water, lemon. It's got maple syrup, but just enough to give it, make it just a little with
sweet.
The cayenne, a little sweet. Yeah.
Has a kick.
As a kick, yes. Okay, so today we're talking about deal with your stuff or lose your relationship. Is it just me? Let me read this sentence. So this is.
It was kind of weird. It was kind of wordy.
It's an article that was written. Who was this written by? It was in Psychology Today, but it says, "When is the risk from fear of risk greater than the risk itself?" Am I saying it right?
I think it's the emphasis where you're putting it.
See, she's saying, "When is the risk from fear?" Of risk.
You
don't pause.
You read it.
Okay, let's see.
Well, I'll take a shot reading it because I read that and I was like, what the? What?
Can you answer this question, Vaughn?
Yeah, go for it.
When is the risk from fear of risk greater than the risk itself?
Okay, I got it now.
That's pretty good.
I got it.
Yeah.
When is the risk?
Does it make sense?
I'm confused. I still don't get it.
So it's almost like saying that, okay, when are you...
The risk of fear of risk.
The risk of fear of risk. Because, well, most people say this, and this is from an existential standpoint, when people are on a deathbed, like, what did they wish that they would have done when they were earlier in life? And number one, or by and large, a lot of times when people say, I wish I would have took more risk. I wish I would have, stepped out on faith as opposed to just being comfortable. And I do think that there is a lot to the whole, there's comfort and familiarity. And a lot of times I see people... stay inside of relationships because they're comfortable. Mm-hmm. At least I know you're crazy. You know what I mean? So as opposed to the crazy that's familiar is better than the crazy I don't know.
Yeah.
So or the potential of
why
crazy.
Why are people so afraid to be alone? What's up with that? Why are they so afraid to just
we're not made
be,
to be alone.
To
though.
Not be well, you know what? That doesn't mean that you jump from one bed or one person
that's
to the
very
next.
True.
Yeah. So.
You know, because you don't want to be alone. Oh my God, I don't want to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
What's the big deal?
I don't know. I think we are built to be like communal creatures, and that's just our nature because one of the biggest
You're never alone. There's 9 billion people on the planet.
You're right. Well, hold on. You got a point there. Well, I'll say
it's
like
hard to
this.
Be lonely.
There are a lot of people who will be in a room full of people and still feel alone and isolated. So when
that's
we talk
in their head.
Yeah, when we talk about being alone, I think there's a different types of being alone, if that makes sense. So I can have people that are present with me, but then to have somebody who really knows me in an authentic and significant way that makes me feel important, that makes me feel purposeful, that makes me feel, like I said, significant. Like that's a different type of knowingness whenever you're with somebody. So, I mean, like I have some friends, you know, we can talk about certain things. We keep things very surface. You know, we might not go very deep, but then there are other people and like, you know me, you get me.
They know where the bodies are buried.
Yeah, pretty much everybody.
That's an Italian expression.
The bodies are buried. Yeah,
Your best friends are the people that you call if you need to bury a body.
You're right. And they would definitely help me bury somebody. So, yeah. If I need to get out in a line, they'll have my back.
I was getting my nails done yesterday, and look how good they turned out. Oh my gosh.
Look at that.
Don't they look so pretty?
I need to get my nails done.
She did an excellent job, okay?
It's been a minute since I've
Bliss Nail Salon in Lakewood. But anyway, so the girl sitting next to me during the storm and the power outage, she got somebody burglarized and broke into her home while she was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Make a long story short, when I was leaving, I said, You need to get a weapon. Mm-hmm. You need to get proficient with it, and don't let anyone ever F with you again. If someone's in your home, you take them out of the game.
Wow.
She just looked at me like, what?
Your right.
And you said it with conviction. I know you did.
And you take them out.
Use the F word.
You take them F and you do it. You get a deep
voice
and everything.
If somebody's in your freaking house, are you kidding me? You're dead, buddy.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you are dead.
So I would probably freeze and be like, take whatever you want.
Really? Oh my God, yeah. Lexi.
I don't know what I would do.
You got a baby to protect.
And I got a baby. Well, like last night, it was lightning and crazy. Yeah. Ryan wasn't home. And I'm like, I'm home alone with a baby. Like, I couldn't even leave the living room knowing that, like, if I were further away and a tornado were to come or anything were to happen, I'd be too far away.
Yeah. So, how's baby Jackson? In one arm, pistol
how's,
in the other.
How's my boy?
He's so good.
I'm so in love with that little boy. I swear, I have a crush on him already. He's like 6 months old.
Yeah, he's
I
know. A cutie. He's a cutie. Sweetest.
He's so darn cute. Well, I was going to say, speaking of cute, but I have nothing cute.
I still feel kind of like, what happened to the lady? I mean, what did she do?
Oh, well.
What did she do?
So he punched her twice right away. If I had a gun, you're dead, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he punched her twice, scared the bejesus out of her. I mean, she was a real pretty girl, too. So he probably would have raped her had he had the chance. But she was upstairs. It was a three-level condo. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, no, she was on the bottom and he was upstairs, I guess. I was getting my nails done. Happened. I was trying to relax, you know? And so
they serve you alcohol.
No, you know what? This place is really, they did have alcohol, but it wasn't like some places where you go in where like everybody's hammered.
Gotcha.
And by the way, when those kind of places, they do terrible work on your nails too, by the way.
Well, that's how they get away with it.
And this place was really, really clean.
It looks beautiful, doesn't it? And then an hour later, you're like, what is this?
Right. Yeah. No, this place was really good. It's my new place.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what did she do?
So he was upstairs. He was upstairs.
So he told her, he punched her a couple of times. Like, I'm talking like made her lips swell. Someone thought she got her lips done. Said, did you get your lips injected?
Oh.
This was like a couple days
after.
No, I got punched in the face by a robber. And but she said, he told her, if you try to leave, I'll kill you. I'll shoot you. And so clearly he had a gun. And he punched her a couple times. And her dog tried to take him out too.
Wow.
And even chased him out over the fence,
that's
over the back.
That's a great dog. Yeah,
I told her, you need to get another dog and a gun.
Yeah.
You know, so seriously.
Wow.
Because two dogs are better than one.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad she's okay. I'm glad. That's really scary. So.
Yeah, and she was just this young, you know, young woman. Probably, I'm going to guess she was maybe 26, 27.
Wow.
You know?
No, that can be traumatic for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
I know a girl who had to hide in the closet while someone robbed her house. She had to hide in there until they left.
Feel like, when do you step up and try to fight someone?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that could get you in. I mean, you could get killed. At that point, wouldn't you be like, take my valuables. I don't care.
Yeah.
Just don't hurt me or my baby. I don't care.
Yeah. Most robbers actually don't want to interact with other people. So they try to, most people sneak in whenever the people are home alone, and then they try to avoid you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other people that, you know, they're opportunistic, and if something happens, you know, because my back is against the wall, and if I don't have anything to lose, then, you know, it's like, stuff's going to go down.
She said, I think he knew I was here. She thinks that he did know, and he just didn't give a crap, and he was coming in anyway.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
So
that's I can see why you say get a gun. So
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to live alone like that, I mean, you have the right to protect your property and your life, your home, your dog, whatever.
Yeah.
And if you've got no business burglarizing people, punk.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the next time he tries it, someone will take them out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, true story, we got our house burglarized when I was growing up, and several times, actually. And the guy snuck in. He was trying to get out the house when he set the alarm off. He came in through the only window that did not have an alarm, and he had stole my mother's purse a couple of weeks before. And whenever he was trying to get out the house, he hopped the fence, ran through the backyard, and my dad was standing in the street with a .357 shooting at this guy.
I've done that.
Like, I'm
when
serious.
I got robbed the second time.
Like, and my dad had, like, 38 hollow points, so if he would have hit this guy.
He's
you
out.
Know, yeah, you know what I mean? And so they picked up the guy maybe like a block from his house. He stayed maybe like 3 or 4 miles away. He had hit all the other houses in the neighborhood, and he was just coming for
us. Have you ever heard any of my robbery stories?
Yeah, you know, I heard.
I shot a tail light out once on a guy trying to get away. I'm like, mother!
Yeah, no, you're badass. I know it. So I don't mess with you, Bernard.
Well, you know, it's instinct. If someone violates you, you get an adrenaline, you know, it's fight or flight.
Fight or flight,
you know? Yeah. And sometimes you got to fight.
Yeah.
So, all right.
You're
what a crazy opening.
Went all over the place.
Well, we've got a great show coming up. We've got Dr. Jonathan Avery. I love this guy. He's so kind. He really is. He's an amazing man. He's the director of addiction psychiatry and associate professor of clinical psychiatry at Weill Cornell University, or excuse me, Medical College and New York Presbyterian Hospital. You're not going to want to miss it. And Von Eaglin, he is a licensed professional counselor, supervisor, and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. We've got lots of good content coming up, everyone. Stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. KetoMed, ketogenic metabolic nutrition. Use the code OLR for $40 off and free shipping. KetoMed.com. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Lexi Brinkley, Von Eaglin. They're all in studio with me, and I have a very special gentleman on the line. It is Dr. Jonathan Avery. He is the Director of Addiction Psychiatry and Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at I always want to say this word wrong.
Wheel or Weill.
What is it, Dr. Avery? Is it Weill or Weill?
I haven't figured it out yet either.
Okay. That's great.
We'll say Weill. How about that? Right. At Weill Cornell Medical College and New York Presbyterian Hospital, in addition to his clinical work, Dr. Avery teaches addiction psychiatry to the Weill Cornell medical students and residents of New York Presbyterian Hospital. He is the founder of the Addiction Stigma Institute, and he was on the editorial board for the DSM-5, that's the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders Clinical Cases book, and he has won numerous awards for his clinical and academic work. You can find him at substanceusestigma.com. That's substanceusestigma.com. Always a pleasure. Welcome back, Dr. Avery. Today we're talking about the opioid epidemic and youth substance abuse. So, you know, Dr. Avery, the opioid epidemic, there's news about it everywhere. You know, we're currently experiencing it, you know, at such a high level like never before. But how did we get here? How did we get to this state of devastation in our country with drug abuse?
Yeah, no, it's a complicated history. I think there's a lot of good books on it, from Dope Sick to Dreamland by Sam Quinones, and it's complicated. Doctors played a role, will be the first to admit it, with prescribing a lot of opiates for pain. The pharmaceutical company played a role. There's certain patterns of the way opiates have gotten into the country, and now fentanyl and these synthetic opiates that are in the drug supply. And unfortunately, we're in this state now where so many overdoses each year. And I always say, when we think about addiction, we think of opiates on one hand, and all other substance use disorders on the other. And it's mainly because of the overdoses and the deaths and sort of the devastation that you're alluding to that we're in the middle of right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're so experienced in this field. You've seen it, so many things that so many of us listening today have not. And so what do you feel as a doctor and as a researcher of this and, you know, just someone who's had a lot of experience, what is at the very core of this?
Well, I think, you know, certain people have risk factors for developing substance use disorders and addiction, and you put them in the right sort of environment where opiates are available, either from doctors or in the community, or, you know, even in more scary ways these days where people aren't even seeking opiates and opiates have contaminated the drug supply. And you get this exposure to opiates and suddenly you're off to the races. Because some people will have an opiate after a procedure, for example, and they'll feel nauseous, they'll feel terrible, they'll say, you know, I'm never want to use an opiate again. Some people will use it for the first time in any of these settings that I described, either recreationally or through a doctor's office, and it'll really be a transformative experience. They'll feel something they haven't felt before, and that's a hard feeling to leave behind for certain people. And you throw in all the other risk factors that they might have in terms of mental illness and trauma and all these other things. And for the right person, it can be very devastating.
Mm-hmm. Well, so why is opioid use, is it different from other substance abuse? What is it about this drug that's so powerful?
Yeah, one is in terms of how it presents. You know, if you relapse on alcohol, cocaine, marijuana, you don't die the way you die when you relapse on opiates. It's just a very powerful substance that if you take too much of, you can overdose from and pass away. And then also, we think it really does something when you start using it routinely to the receptors in the brain that is just very hard for the brain to forget. People will stop using opiates for a year, 2 years, and will see something that reminds them of the use of opiates, and their brain still lights up almost like the first time. It's just an experience that really rewires the circuitry and gets a hold of one very quickly.
I don't think I've ever taken one. If I did, I probably would remember it. Does it make you feel euphoric?
It can. Some people can feel sedated and out of it, but a lot of people describe that sort of euphoria, or sometimes you hear terms like, you know, total body orgasm. Like, you can get this really,
really?
Powerful experience from taking opiates that... that can
wow.
be very reinforcing.
Well, when I asked that question, Lexi raised her hands.
Yeah.
Her hand. So you've taken it before?
Well, I had a surgery last spring, and the weekend before that they found out what was going on, I was on pain medicine, and I don't even remember what it was, but I just remember feeling the best I've ever felt and wanting it all day, all night. Like,
oh,
every
wow.
time I could get another dose, I would, because it was amazing. I slept great. I felt great. I
wow.
was happy. And then as soon as I left the hospital, I mean, I'm telling you, I thought about that all the time. I thought about
wow.
that feeling and how I would get it back. Like, it was amazing.
That is an amazing story.
I know. I mean, I'm okay. I'm not
yeah.
like on the streets trying to find it, but
yeah.
it's one of those things where it's just your brain. You're like, man,
you
I felt
it.
So good. When can I get that again?
Wow.
Right. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
tricky.
Yeah.
Like, that's a setting where I think, you know, we still think opiates do help for this acute, severe pain, and we don't have a good medicine that's an alternative for it. And so we don't, I also often tell people when I start out talking about opiates that I'm just asking for, we're sort of just wanting more reasoned narrative around it, that certain people need it after procedures. Otherwise, you know, that pain can cause a lot of issues for folks.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is to not get stuck on it, is to be able to come off it after the acute setting.
Mm. Well, so what are the treatments that are effective for someone struggling with an opioid addiction?
That's the other big difference for opiates. So we think there are a lot of treatments, and some are medication-wise, some are psychosocial. For folks that get stuck on opiates and develop an opiate use disorder, we really feel like they need to be on medications, ideally, in order to help curb that. And medications like buprenorphine or Suboxone, methadone, or another med that's called naltrexone or long-acting Vivitrol. The idea is that these meds help stabilize the opiate system in a way that decreases the craving for opiates, but also they're very important in that they help prevent overdose.
Wow.
So I think they've shown that relapse rates on opiates are close to 90 to 100% at 1 year if you're not on these meds. And again, if you relapse, you're at risk of death. And so these meds really take put someone in a safer place where they can get their life on track.
And well, are they that powerful that if you relapse, that something happens in the body that like causes death? It's that extreme?
Well, what happens often is that people, when they start using opiates, build up their use over time. And so you start using a little, and then you end up using more and more. And then when people stop, their body sort of resets. And at that reset point, people then, when they resume using, you know, think they should be using the same amount they were using when they stopped using. And then the body's not used to that amount, and then that they can overdose. Mm. And then the scarier thing these days is that the drug supply is sort of changing, and that fentanyl, this very powerful opiate, is being pressed into pills on the street marked as Xanax, into cocaine, into other things. And suddenly someone's supply might be more milder, and they get one that's contaminated with this very powerful opiate, and then that can put them at risk of overdose as well.
Mm, wow. It's really scary. And, you know, I'm reading here that the suicide, this is from Time, U.S. suicide rates are the highest they've been since World War II, and that 14 out of every 100,000 Americans die by suicide, according to analysis released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's National Center for Health Statistics. And that's a 33% increase since 1999.
Right. No, I mean, we think opiates contribute, and, you know, certainly mental health issues as well, and sort of the isolation of American culture. I will say there one treatment for opiate use disorder that's often not available in the United States is sort of these free long-term rehabs that are often available in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The 30-day rehab really isn't sufficient for opiate use disorder unless you're on these medications. But there are these places in Europe, San Patrignano is sort of one of the famous ones in Italy, where for people with severe substance use disorders and mental health, they go to this rehab for 3 to 5 years. It's like a little city of people in recovery, and they work on building back up their self-esteem and learning to live without opiates. And it's a nice alternative model that doesn't quite exist in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But when I hear those overdose statistics, I think, you know, part of it is we have to tackle the addiction, but we need, you know, more things at a community-based level to improve connectedness and, you know, have a lower threshold to engage people around mental health issues and addiction and stigma and all those things.
Well, and this is becoming a real problem among the youth in our country, too. So what are the latest trends among the younger generations and substance abuse?
The good news for opiates is that number is being driven down, where people are smoking less cigarettes, they're using less weed or about the same amount. And we were all, for a number of years, we were all high-fiving each other at the addiction meeting for curbing youth substance use. But lately there's a new substance or a new way of delivering nicotine, these electronic cigarettes or electronic nicotine delivery systems,
mm-hmm.
like Juul and the likes. And they've sort of exploded in the youth culture these days in high schools, where the numbers are like doubling and tripling of the number of adolescents that are vaping and juuling nicotine products these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? They're making a lot of money off of it too. I know
right.
some no, people, yeah, not close friends or anything, but they're in that business that are just raking in the dough, and it really is disturbing. I want to know your thoughts on it when we come back from break. So good to have you with us today, Dr. Jonathan Avery. This guy, he's just so nice, so kind, so knowledgeable. Stay tuned. We're going to be speaking more about opioid addiction and youth substance abuse. Dr. Avery's website is substanceusestigma.com. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. KetoMed, ketogenic metabolic nutrition. Use the code OLR for $40 off and free shipping. KetoMed.com. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Wow. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray. I've got Aviana in studio with me, Lexi, and Dr. Von England. Von England and Dr. Jonathan Avery. Dr. Jonathan Avery, if you're just now joining us, is the Director of Addiction Psychiatry and Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at Weill Cornell Medical College and New York Presbyterian Hospital. He was on the editorial board for the DSM-5. That's the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, Clinical Cases Book, and he has won numerous awards for his clinical and academic work. His website is substanceusestigma.com. Today we're talking about the opioid epidemic and youth substance abuse. So, Dr. Avery, you know, why are so many children abusing substances now? And it's such that the rates have never been higher in our country. Is there a particular reason you think for this?
I hate to always say it's complicated, but it is again sort of complicated in terms of both mental health issues that children have and the culture and the substance use really, it changes all the time, you know, and what the kids are using and what they're enticed by and these latest devices, these electronic nicotine delivery mm-hmm. systems really took us by surprise, for example, in the youth use. 2 years ago, I wasn't seeing anyone using Juuls or using any other of these cool new devices that the kids are using, but suddenly, you know, kids start seeing it, it looks cool, it looks popular, it maybe helps them in some way connect with others or feel mm-hmm. better from mental health, and before you know it, it sort of goes right through the schools and the communities and is another issue that we need to tackle as a community, as addiction providers.
Well, you know, I'm going to ask a question, this question. So these Juuls or these nicotine vapes, would you consider them a gateway drug?
There's a lot we still don't know about them. They haven't been around too long, and we're not sure about all the long-term risks for sure. And it seems like in a lot of ways they're safer than cigarettes. They don't have a lot of the contaminants, although they have their own contaminants. But our big worry is that it'll lead to other substance use, that the vulnerable adolescent brain, when exposed to sort of addictive substances, it starts to hijack the reward pathways and makes them vulnerable mm-hmm. to use of other substances. And there's already some evidence that those who get into nicotine from juuling or other similar devices end up smoking cigarettes more often than their peers, and then there's our same concern that they'll start using other stuff. And it's very easy in these vaping devices to put other things in them, to put mm-hmm. marijuana product, to put other things that one can use. And the tricky thing, too, these days is when someone's smoking a cigarette, everyone knows that person smoking it, right? There's smoke, there's a smell. Mm-hmm. These kids can do this all day, during school, in the bathroom, mm-hmm. at home. Mom and dad aren't aware, teachers aren't aware. And so while it's sort of hard to use substances all the time, with these new devices, you really can. And there's even clothing design where you can hide it in the clothing. I mean, there's just so many ways to sort of continue the use. Mm-hmm. That makes it a lot trickier these days than in the past.
Well, you bring up some really good points. You really do. You do see it a lot. I mean, I was at Baylor Hospital back a couple of months ago, and I remember these three kids came off the elevator, and all three of them had vape pens, and they were all vaping. And my daughter actually pointed it out, and she said, "Yeah, Mom, didn't you smell the bubblegum flavor?" And I was like, "What?" You know, kind of, I guess. But you can hide them so easily. So what are parents to do? You know, what do you think parents should they be? Just more hyper-vigilant and then, you know, tell these kids, you know, sit them down and tell them that these substances are really not good for them and that it creates addictive behaviors. Where would you begin if you were a parent?
Yeah, I think one thing is increasing awareness of the harm of these devices. It's been shown that adolescents often don't know that there's nicotine in the product that they're using, or they're sort of unaware of the harms, especially mm-hmm. with these new devices. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of hope it goes the way of cigarettes, where at first, you know, in the 50s, smoking a cigarette was only predictive of being cool and a cowboy. Mm-hmm. You know, but as time went on and the perceived harm of cigarettes went up, then the use has gone down. And we've seen cigarette use, especially in adolescents, decline every year for many years now. And so the hope is that we can take a similar approach, that we can make everyone aware of the risks. And our thought is that as perceived harm goes up, that use will go down. But, you know, it's hard to convey that message without, you know, the Brain on Drugs campaign didn't work. Finger-wagging mm-hmm. parents tend to push kids the opposite direction. And so it is delicate getting this message into kids that, hey, this is potentially harmful. Let's talk about it without pushing them away and not you know, creating that dialogue that can be ongoing.
Yeah, and there's a connection between this, you know, youth substance abuse and the increase in suicide as well, right?
Sure. Substance use is by far the biggest predictor, or one of the biggest predictors of suicide and of developing mental health issues. And I mean, at times it's self-medication that, you know, some of the mental health stuff comes first, and then the substance use sort of provides the fuel to make it more dramatic and make it worse. And so curbing substance use, getting ahead of it early is really key.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we move too fast. You know, I think these kids are affected by, you know, first it was 4G, now they're pushing the 5G. Everything is moving so fast. This is just, you know, things that I see, that I observe, that I think are impacting our children. And then the overuse of social media. I mean, starting at a very young age, kids have these little tablets, you know, that their parents use to keep them busy while they're doing one task or another. And it's very unhealthy, don't you think, for children?
Oof, all these social media devices, the bells, the whistles. I mean, I find myself checking my phone too much, you know.
Yeah, me too.
As we speak right now. I mean, it's hard to navigate these devices that really, you know, suck you in, and you get used to these fixes. And, you know, these new devices look like electronic. They're sort of like, you can just store them right next to your iPhone and, you know, you're never interact with the world again. And so we got to break a lot of these habits so that we can connect as a people, you know, interact with peers, go outside, all these things that are, you know, would be mm-hmm. healthier longer term.
Oh, I instantly feel better the moment I step outside, even if it's just to sweep the rug, you know, just being outside. But,
sure.
You know, what should parents do if their child is suffering, Dr. Avery?
The key is to get people to help as soon as possible. I often recommend they go first to their pediatrician that knows them, that can help them triage and find addiction treatment in the community. You know, increasingly pediatricians and parents are utilizing sort of urine screens that they just get on Amazon or at the office to just sort of monitor use, so they're not constantly checking on kids all the time. But mm-hmm. the key is early intervention, talking about it earlier, involving health professionals when one gets concerned.
Yeah, and I think watching your kids a little closer. I mean, you want to give your kids freedom. You don't want to over coddle them or be a helicopter parent. But you know, I have to tell you, a friend of mine shared with me last week about in her community, there's a lot of younger children, you know, most of them boys, but like at the age around 12, 13 years old, that are becoming addicted to porn because they get it on their phones.
That's right. No, we're seeing a lot of porn, internet gaming is another big thing that even made its way into the DSM-5. I mean, there's all these online ways to get in trouble for sure.
Yeah. How amazing that you were on that editorial board. That just speaks volumes about, you know, your brilliant mind. It's always great to have you on the air with us. I really appreciate you jumping on today, Dr. Avery.
Of course. No, thanks for having me. Always great to talk to all of you. I appreciate all the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And same to you. Thank you so much, Dr. Jonathan Avery. You can find him at substanceusestigma.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. KetoMed, ketogenic metabolic nutrition. Use the code OLR for $40 off and free shipping. KetoMed.com. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. That's for you, Vaughn.
I appreciate it.
Oh, my goodness. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, Lexi Brinkley, and Vaughn Eaglin. We're going to be talking in just a minute how to deal with your stuff or lose your relationship, but I want to let everyone know that you can go to oneliferadio.com to download and listen to our podcast or subscribe to our newsletter. And you can also go to iHeartMedia.com to listen live or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. A big shout out to our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior, which you're the one that told me about Sun Warrior years ago, Von Eaglin. But it really is a premier, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan, plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to their website, sunwarrior.com, and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. You can also get it at Smoothie King or
Vitamin Shop.
Vitamin Shop, that's right. And Honest Hemp. Honest Hemp products are a natural alternative for managing your stress, reducing mild anxiety, and relieving pain from exercise-induced inflammation. Visit them at honesthemp.com and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. And of course, Paleo Magazine, they have some of the best information on the paleo lifestyle as well as all lifestyles. Great recipes, products, and articles, and on just about all around wellness. And Cassie Bjork is a regular on the show, and she has a regular article in Paleo Magazine as well. And of course, the Wellbeing Journal is now available in both print and digital version. Order online at wellbeingjournal.com. KetoMed, one of our new sponsors, is one of the first over-the-counter clinical ketogenic and antifungal meal replacement. Find them at ketomed.com and use the code OLR for $40 off your order plus free shipping. And of course, Nature's Plate offers handcrafted, 100% vegan, always non-GMO, ready-to-go meals to help lighten your cooking. And they also go by the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, which is what True Foods Kitchen does as well. So check them out at naturesplate.com. And of course, Thorne Research, you have higher standards and so do we. So shop our Thorne dispensary for 20% off and free shipping on every order, everything you need for everything you are. I order a lot from Thorne. I do. So you go to oneliferadio.com/Thorn and they ship right to you. So the shipping is free and 20% off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Lexi? That is okay. Right. All or right. You can shop like online. If you're on there and you're just adding products to your cart, it'll ask you a question like, how did you find us? And you put in One
you
Life
can
Radio.
Look us up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have that new product that I'm
the Memoractive.
Mm. What did Marie say? She said it was being like being on Adderall.
Like, she was like, it's like Adderall and ecstasy combined.
Wow. Yeah. I've been on ecstasy before and that's
say what?
Yeah. That's an intense. You were talking about the opioid thing in the last segment. I was gonna mention that, but
yeah.
Ecstasy is good stuff.
Is it? I've only tried it one time. You know, it was back in the 80s and it was supposed to be the sex drug, right? But it made me scared.
Really?
I felt like a little kitten in a corner.
I don't know what they had in mind, but I knew if I took it a second time, I'd be addicted.
Interesting.
Because so, I was high for like 3 days. So.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
I mean, it was some good stuff. So. Anyways, though.
Wow.
Potent.
Holy mackerel.
I should have mentioned that in the last segment. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always great to have you in studio. It is. Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is also a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department, and his PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. You can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com. That's PrestonPlaceCounseling.com, or follow him on Instagram at VonTalks. So today we're talking about deal with your stuff or lose your relationship. That's a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah. So
you know, is that what you should do if someone doesn't deal with their stuff? You leave them?
Well, so I can't say you should leave them, but
deal with it or go.
All of us have
do or die.
Well, would you agree with me here? Is it fair to say that all of us have baggage?
Of course.
Yeah. So all of us have baggage, and then you bring that baggage into your relationship. Sometimes I say you bring your family of orientation, so baggage from your family, you know, where you grew up, into your family of procreation, so the family that you're going to start. And so it's important to learn and understand and be aware of what you're dealing with before you get into a relationship, or it can be detrimental to the relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
And so from a research standpoint, you know, your family of origin or the baggage you bring into the relationship, that does not make or break your relationship as much as how you deal with it, or is your partner willing to deal with the baggage? Because there's some things that you carry that aren't your fault. You know, I can't blame someone if they experienced trauma growing up.
Right.
However, you do have a responsibility to now deal with the baggage once you get into the relationship, or once you become an adult and you become aware of, you know what, I'm carrying this around.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's a good example of that? I don't know why, but this, and I have not personally experienced this, thank goodness. Well, I mean, I sorta.
Okay.
But sexual abuse.
Gotcha. Well, let me give a an example of baggage from my past relationship that I brought into my relationship with my wife. So
okay.
My ex relationship, it was a little bit abusive. She was a little crazy. She was a little bit hood.
Is she listening?
Well, I hope not.
Were you a little bit crazy back?
I'm probably going to blame it on her. You know,
yeah, why do guys do that? They're always blaming the woman for being crazy.
So, like, I don't want to make a blanket statement.
Crazy dog.
No. Actually, no.
That's not it.
No, true story, though. She came from a very dysfunctional home. She had been sexually abused, and she had a lot of baggage in within her own life, and she brought that into our relationship. So
yeah.
Our relationship was one that was very manipulative, abusive, so on and so forth. And what I found out later on after we broke up, she said, you know what, Vaughn, I would cry to get you to come back. Every time I would cry, and every time, because I have a soft and compassionate heart, what would I do? I would come running
come
back.
Running
oh, back. No, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. And so my wife, who doesn't cry very much, whenever I came into the relationship, I had in my mind, you know what? If a woman cries in front of me, they're trying to manipulate me.
Mm.
So my wife cried in front of me one time, and I was like, man, your tears, like, quit crying. All those crocodile tears, like, those don't move me. And
whoa.
That
quit your crying.
Yeah, and that hurt her so deeply because, you know, she doesn't cry. She doesn't emote as much. And
yeah.
Whenever she does, it really means something.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had that baggage, I brought that into my relationship. And so we had to deal with that. And so now I'm much more responsive. I'm not emotionally dismissive, so on and so forth. But it is really important that I understood that, you know what? That past relationship had an effect on my current relationship. And if you're not aware, you will bring that type of baggage into your current relationship. So, yeah, it can cause, you know, bad things in your relationship. So.
Mm-hmm. How do you know if you're screwed up?
How do you know if you're screwed up?
Sometimes,
you know,
what are some questions you can ask yourself?
Sometimes you don't know that you don't know. And that's the thing about it is that we're all on this path of hopefully enlightenment and self-awareness and where you should be growing. Buddhists actually believe that, you know what, everyone functions at a certain frequency. And let's say, Bernadette, you're dating some guy named Ryan, and then Ryan mistreats you. You guys are together for like 3 years, and then all of a sudden you get out the relationship. Well, if you stay at that same frequency, when Chris comes along, all of a sudden you're going to have the same issues because you have not changed the way you've thought about things. You are attracting the same kind of person.
Mm.
And let's say if you're codependent or if you have some kind of other issue, you're going to attract the same kind of person because those same qualities and attributes, like that same frequency, is just going to match up.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times you may not know that you're messed up until somebody checks you. There's this concept in psychology called Jahari's window, and it talks about Jahari window. The Jahari's window. It talks about four parts of yourself. So you have this known part of yourself that everyone knows and you know to be true about yourself. Let's say you're a great pianist. Okay, I know it to be true. Other people know it to be true. There's another part of myself that's hidden. You know, other people don't see it, but I know it. That's the mask that I put on. And then there's this part called your blind spot. So other people know it to be true about you, but you may not know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example. So I was managing a staff one time and I did these evaluations. And what they told me is that, Vaughn, you know what? You come across condescending and sometimes you talk down to us. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that. I had no idea that I was doing that toward other people. And so some people don't have that level of self-awareness. And that's a part of emotional intelligence as well, is that you
mm-hmm.
have to grow in your own self-awareness so you don't have a blind spot and you understand how it is people see you. And self-growth is a continual process. You're never at the end of the line when we're talking about self-growth. You have to continue to read. You have to continue to get feedback from other people. You have to be open to being corrected. You have to be open to being accountable from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a continual growth process. But again, whenever you're in a relationship, you have to work on self-development. You have to grow individually, and then you have to grow together as a couple.
Mm.
And relationships a lot of times act as a mirror, because my wife says this all the time.
She's
the smart one in a relationship. I have, you know, I'm working on my PhD, but she's the one who's the really intelligent one. And she says, you know what, whenever you get married, my mother-in-law actually says this too, is that you train one another. You train that person to be the person for you, and your spouse or the person you're with, your partner, will act as a mirror. You will see the ugly parts of your personality and your character, and you will see all the good parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say you have an issue with selfishness. I know I did when I first got married, and I was challenged to deal with my selfishness because I can't always put myself first and make the relationship successful
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So I'll be honest with you, I was a bit of a narcissist. So, you know,
well,
I mean, don't blame me.
A lot of guys are.
Just kind of.
It's okay.
I see some women narcissists, too.
No, there's women narcissists,
yeah,
too, for
so
sure.
It's more likely to be guys. You're right.
Yeah. Well, not always, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I was being funny.
No, you're actually
trying to be.
Statistically, you're accurate, Bernadette.
This was our other topic. Do narcissists believe their own lies?
Do narcissists believe that? Sometimes they do, yeah, because they create their own reality, you know, because the way they look at life and their perception is that, one, they may not care about other people and they're arrogant and they're entitled and so on and so forth, but sometimes they know they're lying and manipulate, but other times they believe it so much that, you know, they will
That
is their truth. And then you will experience what's called gaslighting, where they make you even deny your own reality. You say, hold up, I know this just happened, and like, but I'm questioning myself. And, you know, you feel like, you know, something's confusing, something's off, and it's because you may be dealing with a narcissist.
Yeah.
So
And when that happens, you break up with them immediately.
Hopefully so. And don't attract the same person. You need to grow in self-awareness so you don't get the same person.
You talk about training. You train people how to treat you, and you train people what you will put up with and what you will not.
Well said. Right? Yeah. So because there's one person, you know, just because they did something, you may be complicit and allow it to happen. So both you guys have to take some responsibility in the relationship.
I'm thinking of that Olivia Newton-John song, You Better Shape Up. You know, where she throws the cigarette down and squishes it with her high heel.
You better shape up.
And she's like, tell me about it, stud.
Oh my gosh. Well, always great, you guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone out there. And Vaughn, so great to have you in studio. Thank you so much for being here today. And everyone, you know what? Have a great day, because you're not going to get this day back. And you have one body, you have one mind, and you have one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.